one might know. A true love, a partner in heart and soul, in thought and desire. Perhaps I have not yet found another to meet that standard, and so I fear it cannot ever be so again. Perhaps I am simply fooling myself. Whether wrought of guilt or sadness or frustrated rage, I amplify and elevate in my memory that which I had to a pedestal that no other can begin to scale. It is the last of these possibilities that terrifies me, for such a deception would unravel the very truths upon which I stand. I have felt this sensation of love so keenly. To learn that there were no gods or goddesses, no greater design to all that is beyond what I already know, no life after death even, would pain me less, I believe, than to learn that there is no lasting love. And thus I deny the clear truth of Inovindil's advice, because in this one instance I choose to let that which is in my heart overrule that which is in my head. I have come to know that to do otherwise, for Drizzt O'Erden, would be to walk a barren road. Drizzt O'Erden. Chapter 1. The Circle of Life. The Year of the Elves' Weeping, 1462 D.R. Iruladun. "Eh?" the red-bearded dwarf asked. What wizard, what magic, what force had done this to him, he wondered. He had been in a cavern, deep in the ancient homeland of Gontalgrim, struggling to pull a lever and enact an ancient magic that would harness once more the volcanic primordial that had so ravaged the region. Had his effort caused the volcano to erupt? Had that surge of power thrown him far from the mountain? Surely it seemed so, for here he was, out of the cavern, out of the Underdark, and lying in a forest of flowers and buzzing bees, with a still pond nearby. It could not be. He hopped to his feet, surprisingly easy, surprisingly smoothly for a dwarf of his advanced age. "Puent!" he called. And his tone reflected more confusion than anything else. For how could he have been so thrown across the lands? The last voice he remembered was that of Thibbledorf Puent, imploring him to pull that lever to close the magical cage around the primordial. A wizard had intervened, then? Brunner's mind swirled in confused circles, overlapping, finding no logic. Had some mage teleported him from the cavern, or concocted a magical gate through which he had inadvertently fallen? Yes, surely that must be it. Or had it been a dream? Or was this a dream now before him?
"Drizzt!"
"Well met,"
said a voice behind him, and Brunner nearly jumped out of his boots. He spun around to see a plump halfling with a cherubic face and a smile that promised trouble stretching from ear to ear.
"Rumblebelly,"
Brunner managed to gasp, using his nickname for his old friend. No, not old, he realized. Regis stood before him, but he was younger by decades than he had been when first he had met Brunner in Lonelywood in Icewind Dale. For an instant, Brunner wondered if the volcano had somehow thrown him back in time. He stuttered as he tried to continue. He couldn't find any sensible words to unravel his incoherent, spinning thoughts. And then he nearly fell over, as out of the front door of the small house behind Regis stepped a man, a giant in comparison to the diminutive halfling. Brunner's jaw fell limp, and he didn't even try to speak, his eyes welling with tears, for there stood his boy, Wulfgar, a young man once more, tall and strong.
"You mentioned Puent," Regis said to Brunner. "Were you with him when you fell?"
Brunner reeled. The great battle on the ledge of the primordial pit in Gontalgrim replayed in his thoughts. He felt the strength of Clangadin, the wisdom of Moradin, the cleverness of Dumathoin. They had come to him on that ledge, in his final effort, in his victory in the ancient land of Gontalgrim. That victory had come with a grave cost, however. Brunner now knew without doubt. He had been with Puent. Regis's words hit him right in the gut and took the wind out of his lungs. Were you with him when you fell? Rumblebelly was right, Brunner knew. When he fell, he was dead. He swallowed hard and looked around at this place that was surely not Dwarf Home, the halls of Moradin. But he was dead, and so were these two. He had buried Regis a century before, in a rocky cairn in Mithril Hall, and Wulfgar, his boy. Age had taken Wulfgar, no doubt. He appeared to be barely past his 20th birthday, but he would be halfway through his second century of life by now, if humans could live so long. They were dead, all three, and surely Puent, too, had fallen in Gontalgrim.
"He's with Moradin,"
Brunner said, more to himself than to the others.
"In Dwarf Home. Gotta be."
He looked up at the two.
"Why ain't meself?"
Regis smiled comfortingly, almost sympathetically, confirming Brunner's fears. Wulfgar, though, wasn't looking back at him, but rather past him. The expression on Wulfgar's face caught Brunner's eye anyway, for it was filled with warmth and enchantment. And when Brunner glanced back at Regis, he saw that the halfling's smile had shifted from sympathy to joy, as Regis, too, looked past Brunner and nodded with his chin. Only then did the dwarf even hear the music, so quietly, so seamlessly, so fittingly had it grown around them. Slowly, Brunner turned, his gaze drifting out over the still pond and across the small lea to the tree line opposite. There she danced, his beloved daughter, dressed in a layered white gown of many folds and pretty lace, and with a black cape trailing her every twist and turn like some living shadow, a dark extension of her lighter steps.
"By the gods!"
the dwarf muttered, overwhelmed for the first time in his long life. Now that his long life was no more, Brunner Battlehammer fell to his knees, put his face in his hands, and began to sob. And they were tears of joy, of just rewards. Catti Bree wasn't singing, not consciously. The words were not of her own making. The melody of the song flowed through her, but was not controlled by her. And the harmony of the forest music, which permeated the air and added to the song, was not her doing. Because Catti Bree wasn't singing,